Love was an invisible wire, connecting them always. Phoebe steps out of the cab. A man in burgundy approaches with such seriousness, the moment feels as if it has been choreographed long ago. It makes her certain that what she is doing is right.
"Good evening," the man says. "Welcome to the Cornwall Inn. May I take your luggage?"
"I don't have any luggage," Phoebe says. When she left St. Louis, it felt important to leave everything behind, the husband, the house, the luggage. It was time to move on, which she knew because that was what they had all agreed to last year at the end of the divorce hearing. Phoebe was so stunned by the finality of their conversation, by the way her husband said,
"Okay, take care now,"
like he was the mailman, wishing her well. She could not bring herself to do a single thing after except climb in bed and drink gin and tonics and listen to the sound of the refrigerator making ice. Not that there was anywhere to go. This was mid-lockdown, when she only left the house for gin and toilet paper, and taught her virtual classes in the same black blouse every day, because what else were people supposed to wear? By the time lockdown was over, she couldn't remember. But now Phoebe stands before a 19th-century Newport hotel in an emerald silk dress, the only item in her closet she can honestly say she still loves, probably because it was the one thing she had never worn. She and her husband never did anything fancy enough for it. They were professors. They were easygoing, relaxed, so comfortable by the fire with the little cat on their laps. They liked regular things. Whatever was on tap, whatever was on TV, whatever was in the fridge, whatever shirt looked the most normal, because wasn't that the point of clothing? To prove that you were normal? To prove that every day, no matter what, you were a person who could put on a shirt. But that morning, before she got on the plane, Phoebe woke and knew she was no longer normal. Yet she made toast, took a shower, dried her hair, gathered her lecture notes for her second day of the fall semester, opened her closet and looked at all the clothes she once bought simply because they looked like shirts a professor should wear to work. Rows of solid colored blouses, the female versions of things her husband wore. She pulled out a gray one, held it up in front of the mirror, but could not bring herself to put it on. Could not go to work and stand at the office printer and hold her face in a steady expression of interest while her colleague talked at length about the surprising importance of cheese in medieval theology. Instead, she slipped on the emerald dress, the gold heels from her wedding, the thick pearls her husband had lain across her eyes like a blindfold on their wedding night. She got on a plane, drank an impressively good gin and tonic, and it was so nice and cool down her throat, she hardly felt her blisters exiting the plane.
"Right this way, ma'am," the man in burgundy says.
Phoebe gives the man $20, and he seems surprised to be tipped for doing nothing, but to Phoebe, it is not nothing. It's been a long time since a man has stood up immediately upon seeing her get out of a car. Years since her husband emerged from his office to greet her when she got home. It is nice to be stood for. To feel like her arrival is an important event. To hear her heels click as she walks up the old brick entranceway. She always wanted to make this sound, to feel grand and dignified when walking into a lecture hall. But her university was made of carpet. She goes up the stairs, passes the big black lanterns and the granite lions guarding the doors. She walks through the curtains into the lobby. And this feels right, too, like stepping back in time to an older world that probably was not better, but at least was heavily draped in velvet. Then she sees the check-in line. It's so long. The kind of line she expected to see at the airport, and not at a Victorian mansion overlooking the ocean. Yet there the line is, stretching all the way through the lobby and past the historic oak staircase. The people in it look wrong, too, wearing windbreakers and jeans and sneakers, the normal shirts Phoebe used to wear. They look comically ordinary next to the velvet drapes and the gilt-framed portraits of bearded men lining the walls. They look like solid, modern people, tethered to the earth by their titanium-strength suitcases. Some are talking on their phones, some are reading off their phones,